What if the most radical thing we can do is to simply be well? That's the thesis of Casey Gerald's new essay, The Black Art of Escape, published by New York Magazine this month. And it's resonating. Casey has been bombarded with a steady stream of letters and messages from people throughout the world moved by this idea. This isn't Gerald's first work. He's also the author of an autobiography called There Will Be No Miracles Here and founded MBAs Across America, where he and other MBAs travel the country matching students with small businesses. I had a chance to have him on my podcast, Truth Be Told, back in May. Casey, it's so nice to be with you again.
I'm so happy to be with you again, Tanya.
So you open up your essay talking about a period of your life 3 summers ago when you decided to disappear. Like, you literally downloaded a manual called The Vanishing Point, How to Disappear in America. Talk a little bit about what was going on in your life during that time.
Well, in a lot of ways, I had reached a dead end. And I had accomplished about everything there was to accomplish for a young person in this country. I had gone from a, you know, young, poor, black, queer, damn near orphan in Oak Cliff, Texas, had gone on to Yale and Harvard and Wall Street and Washington and given TED Talks, blah, 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 blah. But I was very cracked up. And it was a time when, for black people in this country, 2014, 2015, 2016, it was almost a psychic shattering that had happened for so many of us. And I just couldn't go any further. So I said, I'm going to close my organization. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to leave New York, and I'm going to go into hiding. Now, at that time, I thought it was just kind of a weird disappearing act, and nobody understood it. But what I found and what I write about in The Black Art of Escape is that I actually was joining a long tradition of flight embodied in the black and African-American and African diasporic tradition and told so beautifully by Toni Morrison in her Song of Solomon and Guitar Tales' Milkman Dead, Wanna Fly? Got to let go of all that stuff that weighs you down. And that, I think, looking back, is what I did in 2016.
Let's talk a little bit about our ancestors and how you use that as a point of reference to where we are today and maybe looking to our future. You write in your essay that you don't believe that we are our ancestors' greatest dreams, because that's something that I've lived my entire life thinking and believing, and many great writers have written that. But instead that they are our greatest hope. And what do you mean by that when you talk about them being our hope? Because hope is often a look to the future and they're our past.
Well, it goes to the heart of why I wrote this. I wanted, first of all, to write it for black people. And I wanted us to mark and honor the 400th anniversary of the first enslaved Africans who were brought to this land in 1619, those 20-some-odd Negroes that arrived in Point Comfort, Virginia. I wanted us to say thank you to all those, all of our people who came after, who paid such an enormous price for us to be here, for a black, free black man and a free black woman to be on NPR, you see. And also to try to answer the question that we've been trying to answer in all this time. How can we live in a land that's made to kill us? Now, we've been told a great deal about our people's strategies of resistance and protest. We've been told about their strategies of assimilation and respectability. What we've not been told enough about, again, is our people's tradition of flight. And there was this great story all over the diaspora of Africans who knew how to fly, and they came here through the Middle Passage, and some forgot, but some remembered. And one day they'd be out in the field, and they'd say a secret word, Kum Baba Yali. And black men and black women and black children would get up on wings and they'd fly away. Now, did this actually happen? Who knows? But what it actually is important to understand is what purpose this served for the people. And what I believe in terms of where we go from here, regardless of the external conditions and external reality of white supremacy, white nationalist terrorism, Trump or anybody else, we have an inner resource of freedom that is our birthright and our inheritance that we have to reclaim and renew and restore and harness. And that is what I've tried to do with this essay and with my own life.
You say there are 3 strategies to make it in this world as a black American. The John Henry way, you work hard and you'll succeed. The Nat Turner way, resist. And then there is this 3rd strategy, which you're talking about right now. Can you delve a little bit deeper into that?
Well, my therapist says, everything and everybody you encounter either nourishes you or depletes you. So I try first and foremost to get every source of depletion out of my life. The easiest, lowest hanging fruit there is cutting off the news, except for NPR, of course, here and now. But I cut off the news. I cut off empty, toxic chatter. I try to leave environments. This is why I left New York at that time. It wasn't so much New York. It was the life that I was living in New York. So some of that is just getting rid of the depletion. And then you say, okay, well, how do I nourish myself? I try to sleep. I try to eat well. I go to therapy, and I go to somatic therapy, which is all about the embodied healing, because it's not just about the conscious mind. I do meditate. I do spend time in isolation. I have not dropped acid, though, of course, if it gets to that point, I'll consider it. But I try to surround myself with other people who are ruthlessly committed to nourishing their inner freedom. And we learn from each other. And that's what's been so beautiful about the Black Art of Escape. It has not been me standing on the mountaintop telling Black people anything. It's been a beautiful communal conversation about what this means for and with each other.
This at the same time, though, for some might feel like, or they might say, it sounds like a luxury to say during this time in history that instead of living in resistance, that you're focused on what you call renewal in taking naps. I love to take naps, by the way. I do. Like, my mom will say, are you going to take a nap? You know it.
I mean, the
idea that taking a nap at this time, when we talk so much about being woke, is actually maybe turning our back on what is needed at this time. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, if you want to be woke, you got to be well over the long haul. There's no enlightened being in the history of the world who doesn't say that the inner self being free is a primary condition for the outer world experiencing freedom. So that's one. Aside from that, as I say, nothing that I'm saying absolves us of our responsibility to be citizens. But white people get to be citizens as a hobby. Black people are expected to make citizenship their full-time job, plus overtime.
Explain what you mean by that.
Well, I'll tell you, I have great friends who have devoted their lives to fighting injustice and white supremacy and police brutality, among other things, and I love and respect them for it. But I would love and respect them even if they didn't. I don't believe that Black freedom ought to require Black death. I think of the great military general George Patton, who said, no man ever won a war by dying for his country. The point is to make the other poor dumb bastard die for his country. So I want Black people to live. I don't want them dying for some cause or for some country that's not going to lift a finger for them. Of course, we have spent 400 years doing just that. And I respect and admire and honor all those people who did. But I think it's due time for us to realize that to some degree, Black people fighting white supremacy is a bit like Don Quixote tilting at windmills.
Hmm. I also want to talk to you about something that you accidentally witnessed a few years ago, the reenactment of Miss Fannie Moore. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, this story. Oh, it changed. It changed my life, and I think anybody who hears it will never forget it. And I learned of the story of Miss Fannie Moore through a brilliant Black artist, Jatavia Gary, and her work, An Ecstatic Experience. In the 1940s, the Federal Writers Project went down to Georgia and spoke to a woman, Miss Fannie Moore, who told them about her mother. One day on the plantation, Miss Fannie Moore's mother got happy. She started singing and shouting and hooting and hollering. And the old Master Jim, he comes down and he says, what's all this going on in the field? You think I sent you out here to hoot and yell? No, sirree. I sent you out here to work, and you better work before I put this cowhide across your black back. And a smile comes across Miss Fannie Moore's mother's face, and she says, Lord has shown me the way. I ain't gonna grieve no more. No matter how you all treat me and my children, the Lord has shown me the way, and someday we ain't going to be slaves no more. No, Master Jim takes that bullwhip and starts lashing Miss Fannie Moore's mother's back, but she didn't say nothing. She just went on back out into the field, shouting and singing, I'm free. I'm free. I'm free. So I wrote The Black Art of Escape, and I'm going around having conversations with black people about it because I want my 14-year-old niece, I want my 7-year-old cousin, I want those two little black boys I saw on the A train going uptown in New York City yesterday to know that no matter how this society treats them, there is an inner freedom that the world didn't give them and the world can't take away.
Casey Gerald, the author of The Black Art of Escape in New York Magazine. Thank you, Casey.
Thank you so much.
And we want to hear from you. What are some ways you escape? Join the conversation at hereandnow.org.